Hello there. This is a recording of a teaching session which occurred on June 17th, 1997, here at Holden Village. This session is entitled, The Fifth Commandment, The Gift of Life, and it's led by John Buca. So let's tune in on John for this session.
Gracious God, you call us together to live with you and with one another in community. As we live with one another in community, may we respect the gift of life that you've given us, and may we value the relationship that you continue to nurture and support us. In Jesus' name, amen. Take a book, if you would. I'm John Buca. I am a senior pastor at House of Hope Lutheran Church in New Hope, Minnesota. As my avocation, I have also become a writer. I have done 6 different educational resources for Augsburg Fortress, one of which you have in your hand, which is Stop Listening to Love, Confirmation. Another one, which is an adult Bible study in the Bible Basics arena called 10 Key Events in the Life of Jesus. 4 more will be published beginning next year and into 1999, I believe. I'm also an associate in Augsburg Youth and Family Institute, which I have published 2 things, which are in the bookstore, Passages and Pathways for Parents, which are a series of workshops for parents of preschool children. And that's all Xeroxable. And this is family as well as student resources for confirmation. This fall, we'll publish another series called Stories for the Heart, which are 10 biblical Old Testament stories and 10 New Testament stories. So that's who I am. Before we get into this, a little bit of review from a catechetical perspective. When the Decalogue was given, 10 commands were given, we had 2 tables. And if you remember, sometimes artists' rendition going something like that. That's why I'm not an artist. The first 3 dealt with the relationship with God. The last 7 dealt with the Israelites' relationship with one another. When we talk about the theme this week, No Longer Strangers, the last 7 helped the Israelites deal with how to live together in community, how to live together as well as how to survive trusting that God would be faithful, and God in turn was hoping that Israel would be faithful to him, to God. What we want to do today is we will break into small groups and discuss chapter 5, session 5, which begins on page 15. For those of you who haven't been here, the style of this is not to pour in knowledge as much as to get young people in a confirmation setting to exchange ideas, beliefs, and perspectives. What we have done in Holden in the past, especially last year, is that we have gathered adults and youth together in small groups and have exchanged different views and opinions. The challenge of a resource like this is to connect the context of a youth's life with scripture, with catechetical teaching. And as those 3 arenas are connected, the goal, at least in House of Hope's mind, at our church, is to empower our youth to make faithful choices as they move out into the world and as they continue to brush up against the various situations that will allow them or challenge them to choose. Now, as we do that, then what I want you to do is break into small groups of 4, no more than 5, with this one proviso that there be at least one or two youth in each group. And I think we have two, four. Shane, I'm calling you a youth, as well as Erica, Tim, and Steve. So what do we have, four, eight? We've got nine youths. So break into small groups, circles, please.
The issue for the Fifth Commandment is life. Tim Vengert's new translation of that commandment has gone from thou shalt not kill to thou shalt not murder. For those of us who grew up with the memorization of the Ten Commandments, that's a shift that may make us uncomfortable, but according as Tim looked at what Luther had done, that was his conclusion. I don't know what it says in the Hebrew. Is that more accurate or not? Are you familiar?
Well, yeah, it is. There's about 20 words for killing in Hebrew.
Okay.
They all have different connotations.
Okay.
That word does mean more murder than just general killing.
Okay. We have our resident Old Testament biblical scholar in our midst, upon whom I will draw very freely. Okay. Now, I need someone to read the part of Erica, please. Okay, Catherine.
My name is Erica. I am 12, and I live with my mom, Shirley, my dad, Eric, and my sister, Patty, who is 10. Oh, yes, I almost forgot to mention my two brothers. Tom is 8, and Aaron is 6. It happened to my mom when she was attending my brother's kindergarten conference. My dad said my mom had a shooting pain in her head that wouldn't go away. She drove her car home into the garage. She went upstairs, took two pain pills, and went to bed. When my dad came home from work, he found her in bed and he couldn't wake her up. He called the ambulance and they took her to the hospital. Later, I was sitting in the waiting room when the doctor came up to us and said to my dad, "I'm afraid your wife has a cerebral hemorrhage." That meant a blood vessel had broken in her brain. The bleeding caused mom to drift into what doctors called a coma. We could talk to her, but she couldn't say anything or move a muscle. They also put her on a machine called a respirator that did her breathing for her. She waited for days, and we hoped she would get better. But each day it seemed to the doctors and to me that she was not going to get better. It was all very scary. Yesterday, the doctor came in to meet with all of us and said, "I'm afraid tests show that Shirley's brain is dead. She will never recover. I recommend that you consider discontinuing the respirator and letting her die in peace." I couldn't believe it. It was like someone had hit me hard in the stomach. I couldn't catch my breath. I felt weak and dizzy all over. It seemed like I would never stop crying. I buried my face in Dad's shoulders and hung on. That day, when our pastor came to see us, I couldn't stand it any longer and I cried out, "Pastor, she's only 40 years old. If we pull her off the respirator, she will die. Isn't that like committing murder?" The pastor didn't answer my question. All the pastor did was to pray this prayer. "Oh God, please guide and direct this family as they make decisions about life and death. As they do, let them know that your love for Shirley and for all of them never ends. For Jesus' sake, amen."
Okay.
I don't want my mom to die.
Okay, good. Now, pick a moderator for each small group and address the questions. And then we will begin to process that. Okay, why don't we call it? We have a physician with us today, so this was written by a minister, and I'm not a medical doctor, and I know there are many, many inaccuracies here. But basically what we're really talking about not only is the question, is it murder, but we really are talking about something called a living will or advanced directive. Under that is called a DNR order, which means do not resuscitate, which means that if my 83-year-old father is found on the floor of his apartment, he does not want the crash team to come in and pound on his chest and do the electric paddles to bring him back. That's called do not resuscitate. This is called do not intubate. And correct me if I'm wrong, intubation means that you stick something down the throat to make sure that
usually do not intubate is kind of part and parcel of do not resuscitate. Intubation is considered part of resuscitation.
Okay.
In other words, you can't, getting somebody an external cardiac massage doesn't help if you are ventilating at the same time.
Okay.
So you can sometimes ventilate them mouth to mouth or use a bagel ventilator. If you really want to do the job, you got to put a tube down.
All right. Okay. Now, so let's get into the questions. First question is the issue of pastoral care. Those of us who are pastors have faced this situation before, again and again and again, where we are confronted with a family. The doctor has come into the room and said, look, we've got to make a decision here. We have to wean the person from the ventilator or the respirator. You have to make a decision. This is a 12-year-old girl. She responds, I don't want to let mom go. If you're the pastor, she asks the question, is that like murder? What are you going to respond? How are you going to respond? Yes, Tim. Pastor Tim, what are you going to say?
I don't know.
Okay, that's a good question. I mean, that's a good response. I don't know. Nothing wrong with that. Okay, what did you guys talk about in your group? What did you say?
Opinion.
Yeah. Okay.
And some personal experiences with that situation.
Can you say more about that?
Well, you said you had a friend whose mother, he essentially had to make the decision whether or not to pull the plug on his mother when she was incapacitated. And then Tim had an uncle, was it? Yeah. Who was in that situation too.
And what, first of all, they pulled the plug, literally. Okay, well, tell us the situation, the context.
It was a brain tumor. Same story.
Okay.
And sudden. But going back to the question, we talked about that no matter what, the pastor is kind of making an opinion.
Okay.
Is answering with an opinion to Erica.
Okay. Okay. So no answer is an answer. Is that what you're saying? The prayer is an answer which says the issue is not my response to the question. The issue is how's God going to help the family? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I don't know if the group agrees with me, but that's what
okay.
I was saying.
Okay, let's move to this group. What did you talk about with the question? With the pastor, Erica's question of the pastor.
One of the things that occurs to me is, who's got the obligation to paint the scenarios for the family? But if we do, if we don't, is that your job as a pastor or in terms of the medical team?
Yeah.
It's kind of a subset of this. I mean, it's not answering her underlying question. But, you know, she's already probably this 12-year-old. I'm sure she's got siblings and a father with her, but if she's concluded that it's obvious that she's already lost her mother, now the question is, we take this next step and like party to murder.
Yeah.
To make that, to answer that question, and essentially what's left here is kind of a vacuum of facts.
Oh, and that's why you're discussing.
Yeah.
Because there is a vacuum of facts. That's right. But go ahead.
So, in the real world, how is that?
Yeah.
I mean, this presupposes there's been no sit-down session with the doctor who just didn't pop in the room and say, this is it, gang. You make a decision. You know.
I'll tell you, from my perspective, it depends upon the doctor, it depends upon the setting. I'm sure that the doctor would have had more preparation, and there would have been more preparation than this. From a 12-year-old's perspective, however, okay, there might have been a whole lot of preparation that the 12-year-old wasn't a part of, and suddenly the doctor comes in and the 12-year-old's present. So again, it's from the 12-year-old's perspective here.
Which is to say all the information in the world is going to change her.
Correct. Exactly. Exactly. Okay.
A 12-year-old's perspective like that can influence the rest of the family.
That's right. The other situation that I run into, and Roger, you can react to, or you know, Fred, you can react to too, is that a lot of times it's the non, in an older situation, it's the non-custodial sibling that gives the greatest difficulty in dealing with the decision. In other words, if it's in Duluth, if it's in Valparaiso, Indiana, if it's in Wisconsin or Minneapolis, and somebody lives in Los Angeles and flies in, and the immediate family has been dealing with this for 5 days, and they're ready to let her go.
Especially if that person from out of town is male. Men don't understand what's going to be involved in taking care of her over the next many months.
Okay.
And women do.
We
all know that.
And technically, she's already dead because her brain's dead. Okay? We know that. But the 12-year-old doesn't know that and doesn't understand that. Roger?
I think I would want to know what the 12-year-old knows. I would like her to tell me what has she heard so far, what have they told you, what is, you know, and she could begin to tell me what she probably knows is already the outcome, needs to verbalize that she needs to tell me. And then if the other family members are sitting around them, if they haven't told her, then there's a chance for them to start, so they can start managing and handling their feelings and what's happening.
Okay.
But rather than giving her an answer, I want her to start telling me what she does know.
Tell me more about, you'd say tell me more about that.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
One common argument, Pat, is that there seems to be a need for more time here. I mean, that they needed to work through the issues and deal with there wasn't the time for a snap decision for that.
Okay.
So that there's just more time now.
Okay. Anything else about your group? About this question?
Well, the problem the doctor has with time is that it says it's gone on for several days, I don't know how many days, but after you get into about 10 days, 2 weeks, she's got a tube down her throat. This tube will cause problems with her trachea, will cause tracheal stenosis. She'll need a tracheotomy. And then she'll need some nutritional support pretty soon.
Yeah.
And you get into another echelon of care here. And so now you're talking about stopping the ventilator. If you do all that, then you're talking about stopping all that other stuff too later. You've got more decisions to make. So the doctor, you can't go on like this forever.
Okay. Yeah.
There's an emergency on the part of the doctor.
Okay. Okay. This group. If you were the pastor, how would you answer Erica's question? Peter, I know you're never going to be a pastor. How did you deal with that? Anybody?
Well, we talked about what is really murder and what isn't. I don't know.
Okay. That's a valid response from a 12-year-old. Okay. Now, let's skip to the last question. How many of you have talked about things like living wills, advanced directives, with your parents and or with your children? Oh my, okay. How many of you, can you talk about how that went? Go ahead.
Well, recently my mother, my father passed away several years ago. My mother's remarried and she's had her wills updated, and part of that process was discussion about an advance directive or a living will is another way of referring to it. My mom had a lot of discomfort about the whole thing. I think she felt as though she didn't want to put her living or dying in someone else's hands. But I think ultimately she saw that it was rational to address the issue now, and to and ultimately chose to have a living will.
Let's flip this around. Let's say it was one of your children, and let's say it's not brain dead. Let's say comatose, and the capability of what we would perceive to be productive, good life. I'll give you an example in our church. We have an 18-year-old girl in a wheelchair who technically drowned when she was 4 years old. It was December in Minnesota. She fell through the ice. She was under 20 minutes. They brought her back. Very, very low functioning person. Okay? Now, none of us as parents want that to happen. But let's turn that around. Then I'm going to ask the kids that are here what they would want as well.
Well, this person has some brain activity, I take it?
Yeah, she does. She has a lot of problems. She's malnourished. She weighs 67 pounds. She went to Gillette Hospital in St. Paul, and they put a GT feeding tube in her stomach to try to get her to gain weight. She has a bed sore that hasn't healed. Just humongous problems. And yet, when she was going down to surgery, she cried. Mm-hmm. When I come in and I touch her face, she smiles. Nonverbal. And you can see that the brain damage, I mean, at least what I've been told, as the hands curl up more and more, that's one sign of brain damage. Mm-hmm. That's very severe.
Okay. Well, it'd be awfully a hard decision to make, I think. Things that would be relevant to me in that decision would be my evaluation of this child's quality of life, and how they experience life, if I can tell. I think another thing would be, how my wife feels about it. For whose benefit is the life being extended? I think for myself, if I could somehow become satisfied that the bad experiences for this person, or the pain or the suffering, was greater than the joy or their ability to experience life, and if my spouse and if sustaining their life served no other purpose than for them to be with me, I think I'd find it much easier to terminate them.
Okay.
This situation is a lot more complicated because in the attempt to resuscitate, once you have resuscitated her, you don't know until sometime later what functions will return and what functions won't return. There are people who have had hypothermia in drowning situations who have been down probably 20 minutes, who have come back and are functioning perfectly well now. And in this situation, once you've resuscitated her, it's a very different situation to take an active step.
That's true.
To terminate life,
that's
as
true.
Opposed to this situation where there's
exactly
brain dead.
No,
and just stopping the breathing.
You're absolutely right.
Stopping the assistance.
Okay. Somebody else. Any other? First of all, those of you who have talked about this with children or parents, how did it go? What did they say? Go ahead.
My mother-in-law died several years ago, and we had talked with her as she was getting older about the do not resuscitate business, and she was very much in agreement with that. Unfortunately, in the situation when she was being transported from a nursing center to the hospital, the DNR did not go with her, and the EMTs resuscitated her in the ambulance, and so she lived another 3 months after that. And we were very upset with it as family members because we didn't understand how the medical procedures worked. But even though she had the order there, as soon as she's transferred, the EMT is required by law to resuscitate. And so I think that became a very difficult thing for the whole family to deal with those last 3 months, because her ability to function was severely restricted due to that.
Anybody else? Go ahead.
Well, we had an experience with my father. He died of emphysema, and he was in a nursing home, and basically come down with the final case of pneumonia for him, and his thing was to not put him on the ventilator. That was the directions. But as it came down to the home stretch, he wasn't willing to give it up, and so then the last moment, when it was probably getting to the last days, he then changed his mind. and had to get put on a ventilator, and he lived about another week or so after that. But it was, he had given the directions, he had told everybody about it, but when push came to shove, his heart wasn't there for it. And so he was still able to make the decision.
He wanted a 20-second timeout.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go ahead.
I just want to offer one other thing. I practiced law for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, and I actually drafted a lot of these things. And the thing that surprised me in my practice was that I made it available to every client who had a will. And I don't know if this is a common experience for others, but, you know, 100% of the people that were my clients asked for this.
Okay.
And actually signed them.
So okay.
I think it's a very, very common thing.
Adults always assume that we're dealing with people in their 80s here. But that's not true. Kids, if you were in a position, say there was a flicker of brain activity, say there wasn't, what would you want? Steve?
For what?
You tell me.
Well, if I had nothing, I wouldn't live no more. If I had some and they could rehabilitate me so I could talk, then that'd be okay. But if I couldn't talk and just kind of sit there.
Okay. So there's three levels that you'd want your parents to consider. Nothing, pull me on. If I couldn't use my voice anymore and just sit there, pull me on. If the prognosis was that I could be rehabilitated, hang on to me, baby. Right? Okay. Hitomi, can you talk about Japan and what happens in situations such as these? Have you talked with your parents if you would ever be like this? You have?
Yes.
Can you share that?
I asked a question for my mom, and she said, if she is in this situation, she said she want me to pull the plug. She wanna die.
Okay.
She said.
Okay.
But if I was in this situation, if I was this 12 years old Erica, I don't want my mom to die.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want.
What if you were in the mom's? In other words, what if it was you in the coma? What would you want your parents?
If I was this.
If you, yeah. What would you want your parents to do? Say you return to Tokyo, or say you return to Valparaiso. You're crossing the street. You get hit by a truck. Now, mind you, I don't want that to happen. Catherine doesn't want that to happen. Fred and Barb don't want that to happen. What would you want done?
I don't know. It's hard.
It's hard. Okay. Catherine?
I think I'd talk to my parents about it and say if the quality of my life is... I mean, I'm not taking offense to like a lot of church Jessica, but I really don't want to live like that. I see her and it just seems like, I know she has feelings, but it seems like she doesn't get the experience of like, the joys that we do, you know? And I guess I don't want to live in that quality of life. I think I'd be, you know, better off dead. And so I want my parents to look at the quality of my life. If I was, you know, I could talk and do stuff. I want to live. But.
Okay. Matt, how about you?
Yeah.
If you were in a coma, if you couldn't speak, what would you want your mom and dad?
Well, if I didn't have any chance at all, I would want them to pull the plug. But if I could rehabilitate and walk and talk, well, if I had a chance for that, I'd want to live.
Okay.
What about if you could be rehabilitated so that you could talk, but you'd be confined to a wheelchair for your whole life, and someone would have to feed you?
Then I probably want to die.
I would.
You would what?
I would, because then you can give monkeys, like they train monkeys that
help you
do stuff.
Cool. Okay. Shane, what about you? You're not far from me.
I think I'd agree with Matt. There was a lot of anguish and pain in your life, and you weren't able to communicate with other people. I think I just assumed I...
Okay. Okay. Pete?
I don't know, the same thing with Shane and Matt. I didn't want to die if I wasn't able to talk or use my hands and
Okay. Basically, what we've done now is we've talked about the gift of life from a situation that is more common than all of us want to believe. Now, is it murder? That's not the issue. The issue is, can we talk about the value of life and what we want done in situations such as this? And can we, and again, at House of Hope, especially on the fifth commandment, we bring, for the ninth grade, we bring parents and youth together to deal with this. The biggest problem is we never have enough time to complete all of this. And so since I want to move on to another style of interaction, I want you to get up and pretend that this speaker here says, agree on it. That chair over there with M21 says, disagree on it. And we are now on page 17, and it's a matter of life and death. Stand up, take your things in hand, and as I read out, if there were a war, I would serve and I would kill if I had to. Agree on this side, disagree on that side. Agree on this side, disagree on that side. Yeah. Okay. And we can have people in the middle. That's fine. But I'm going to call on you first because you are interesting. Right. Mr. Campbell, right? First name.
Bruce.
What makes you in the middle? And you're a little bit more to this side.
So I have a lot of trouble with the just war theory. I was 18 years old, just at the tail end of the Vietnam War, and got my draft number but never got called. So I had a lot of dilemmas that I went through as a college freshman trying to decide what I would do. Killing is a very difficult issue. I think it's something that our society struggles with a lot. We talk about it at Forum, I guess, Thursday night, from what I understand.
Yeah.
I think if I was convinced by people I respected that there was an issue that was worth defending a country or a family or a citizenry for, I think it would be easy. I could kill somebody.
Okay.
I think it is protecting my family.
Okay. Larry.
I think very much the same. It would depend a lot on the war. There's a lot of wars that have been fought that I would be way down at that end on. But I can also imagine circumstances where, you know, basic defense of family and country, not defense of some abstract principle.
Okay.
Would be important to me.
Okay. I have a split family on this issue. But go ahead.
I wouldn't kill somebody if I was on like ground control and you could see him just standing there. If it was a cheap shot, I wouldn't either. But if you're in a plane and you're just blowing up tanks and stuff and you can't see the people die, that's fine.
What was really, really strange for me, and I'm a little bit older than Bruce, is the day my mother died in 1991, the U.S. Congress was meeting to declare war on Iraq. And what was very strange was that as a kid of the Vietnam War, there wasn't any protest. I mean, there was none. And it goes back to the video game thing that was, what I'm saying is, those of us who had CNN in that time, could see the war nightly, and it was more antiseptic than it was in Vietnam, very much so.
There was some protest.
Yeah, it was very little.
Not much, though.
Seattle,
we were in the park in Minneapolis.
Okay.
When that happened.
Okay, but compared to
20 people.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do here. Here. This is called Where You Stand, okay? And we do it a lot. Go ahead.
I feel like with a war, there's, I wouldn't want to enter into the battle, and if my family were needing defending, I feel like there's some fate or something involved that I still can't equate someone else's life or the life of my parent or my sibling.
Okay. That's okay. I'm even good.
Steve. Love your enemies. Jesus' teaching is unequivocal. There are no exceptions if your government tells you to do it. And I think it's clear that way. It doesn't mean emotionally I'm not torn. It doesn't mean that I don't feel the sense of anger or outrage. But clearly the gospel calls me not to respond in kind.
Okay, great. She told me.
Because they have family and they have
Many
kids and
Great. That's great. Now,
these gentlemen over here.
Tim.
I'd probably go to the war and really I'd make something for my mind to say, like, I'm doing this for my family or my country, and then when it comes down to it, when they're aiming the gun at me, I'd have to take the gun and shoot them or something, because it'd be like defending yourself. And
Okay. Shane?
I guess I agree, because I have enough faith in our government and its views that we'd be fighting for a just cause.
Okay.
Democracy, it's really supposed to be a reflection of the people's beliefs.
Okay. Bob?
Well, I had to make this decision in 1967.
Okay.
And I wound up in the Navy on a destroyer for a year, and luckily the North Vietnamese didn't have a Navy. I knew plenty of people who were going to Canada, and today in the Vietnam situation, it'd be a little different, but at that point in time, I actually didn't hesitate.
Did you ever see me
in I'm sorry, what? No, I was a doctor. If you went into the infantry, you had to carry a sidearm, and who knew?
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Number two. We can't do agree or disagree on this. We should do, let's do A is here. Let's do B is here. C is here.
D is the corner.
Okay? So we go A, B, C, D. I would kill someone if A, B, C, D. Rearrange. Where are you going to stand? Okay?
What are you saying?
A is in the corner. This glop is B. This glop is C. The corner is B. This glop is C. This glop is B.
Whoa.
Okay? Barb, we haven't heard from you.
Mm-hmm. I said C, if they had killed someone in my family.
Okay. You're in there.
That's okay.
If you want to read a fascinating story in the latest issue of the Holden...
Good Courage?
The Don Stryker story.
C.
Don Stroyford was an LS, is an LSS area director in the state of Minnesota, I want to say about 5 years ago. His daughter was walking home from her job at Perkins and was assaulted and killed by two people. I still remember in the Star Tribune at the sentencing hearing where he got up and he said, "I forgive you guys for doing that." Most incredible witness I've seen that have, you know, that have dealt with that. I think I'd be where you are. I'd want to kill. Okay?
I think maybe that it's one of those things too. It will change over time as time passes. And I think for me, if I was in that situation, I think initially I would want to kill, but I would pray and hope that if time rolled on, that you could work through that.
Okay.
I also just will add to this, how I read this, even though this is not how it was written, if they were killing or trying to kill someone in my family, I feel a real desire to defend. I think if they had killed, I don't think I would. Okay.
Now, your husband isn't going to defend you here. you want to talk about that for a
while? If this said I would want to kill someone, I'd be over there somewhere.
But, okay.
Because I want to wring their bloody neck for almost any one of these things. That's what my guts were telling me.
Okay.
But if I had time to get calm enough to think, I would, you know, even if somebody was trying to kill me, if I had my wits about me, I would try to stop them without having to kill them first.
The options aren't usually given that you can defend your family short of taking human life.
Okay.
That's where you really have to make some distinctions.
Okay. Matt, sorry. If you weren't walking around so much, I wouldn't call on you. So tell me what's going on.
Well,
you're going to have to go through this next year anyway. So
that's what I would do with A. I mean, if someone was trying to kill me, maybe if they would come face to face with me and point a gun to me, but if I heard rumors about like smaller people trying to kill me, I wouldn't go over and kill them, because if they weren't trying to kill me, then there's no point in going over.
Okay, that's a good...
I would never kill anybody unless it was self-defense.
Okay, that's cool. Let's move on to number three. A, B, C, D. Timothy McVeigh on Friday was sentenced to die. I believe that the death penalty is A, wrong, and should be completely abolished.
Corners.
Oh, Matthew said the corners. It'd be easy.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. A, B, C, D. My logical sign. Okay. A is wrong and should be abolished completely. B should be expanded to include all crimes of passion, rage, or violence, including rape. C, as William Shakespeare once said, only rids the society of the alleged criminal, but does nothing to prevent future similar crimes. D, should be determined by the individual states.
I don't know.
Or it can be in the middle.
You kind of go together. They're not opposite each other, really.
And then all these people in the middle. Right?
Okay, that's cool. That's okay.
You got to kill some.
Sure, Tommy, does Japan have the death penalty?
Yes, we do.
For what kind of crimes? Yeah. Just for murder? Okay.
Killing several people.
Okay.
But not killing one person? If you only kill one person, you want to be put to death?
What about, okay, how many years ago was it? It was just a couple years ago. The accident, the killing on the train in Tokyo, where the terrorists came.
Om Shinrikyo?
Huh?
The Om Shinrikyo?
I don't know what, but you know what I'm talking about? What happened to those people? Do you know?
I think the
main person,
mm-hmm.
I think he will die.
Okay.
But I don't know the others.
Okay. Okay, let's talk about this, the A folks. Is Ryan should be abolished completely. Go ahead.
I visited a man on death row for 10 years in Georgia. He's mentally retarded, illiterate, had probably about a fifth grade education. He bludgeoned a man to death with a tire iron. The reason he was on death row was because he had a public defender. And it's very unusual that Tim McVeigh got the death penalty because he had a good attorney. Most people on death row have court-appointed attorneys, and that's why they're on death row. It's an issue of economics and things like that. The reason I talk about Bob Redd, who was my friend, is I took both my boys to visit him, and I could experience the love and the compassion that he had as a father. He was a father of five kids. His kids never came to visit him, but the love and compassion he had for my kids showed that clearly this was not somebody who was totally devoid of any sense of love or whatever the stereotypes in society are of these killers. And so it's very clear to me that
okay.
He should not be executed.
I'm not sure if I understand what you're talking about, the attorneys.
Most in states that have the death penalty, almost exclusively the people who are sentenced to death are the people who do not have good attorneys. If you are wealthy and you commit murder, chances are your attorney will be able to convince the jury to get you life in prison.
What? OJ.
He had like five attorneys.
Yeah,
like
OJ.
High power and
right.
Like the best.
Exactly.
Quality and
yeah.
He got off.
Yeah. Anybody else? Jackie, we haven't heard from you yet.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to moderate a forum on this topic tomorrow night. I think I better just not say anything. There's so much interest in the forum.
Oh, well, okay. Come to Jackie's forum tomorrow.
I'm just the moderator.
So. Okay. Anybody else here? Go ahead, Larry.
Well, I think first place the death penalty has never really stopped people from further murders or other people from murdering, and the fact that it is applied very unequally in this country.
Okay. Catherine, you were going to
say. I'm here just because I saw when they did the Tim McVeigh thing, and it was kind of sad just because it's sad to see someone die, but yet he did kill all those people, so I'm kind of stuck. You know, and it's also maybe do you think he'd be, maybe he's better off dead, but do you think he'd be more like suffering being in years of prison for his life, you know?
Do you think he will be executed? I don't.
Well, they said there's at least 5 years of appeals.
Right.
And that's so expensive for us to keep him on, death row for that long.
Okay. Tim?
These guys yesterday and I were talking about like he should go to life imprisonment, but also have to be like taking care of kids and stuff like in a nursery. And it was someone like someone here. I forgot who it was.
I told you that.
Yeah, it was him. And so he'd be like punished for killing all those kids and stuff. And I think the part about the rape. I watched a movie like a couple months ago, the one where the two guys drove into the black town and raped a little girl.
Oh, no.
I think that should be added on. If that is like really bad. And,
who's that? Is the time for
killing?
Yeah, that's it.
So that's a Griffin.
I thought that was really bad of them to do and sick. And I'm okay. Sort of stuck in the middle of. All of them.
Okay. This group, anybody want to respond from this group? You're the state's rights people.
No?
No, you're not.
No.
You're the
state's
rights people.
Okay.
Nothing for me.
Okay. Any? Go ahead.
I think that they just want to kill them because the people will get all mad and start riots because, like, if Timothy McVeigh, like, everybody is sorry that he wasn't going to get the death penalty on CNN. But say if he didn't, everyone would be mad and probably burn and stuff.
Okay.
But then if they didn't have the death penalty at all, no one would want to do that. No one would, because they'd be like always in life in prison. They never had like a choice to go on death penalty. Mm-hmm. Death.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Any opinion,
one way or the other, on this one? There's no right or wrong answer here, so.
Okay. What's the guy's name?
Tim.
Yes. I heard about him, and I know that he killed many people, but I agree with Catherine's idea because it's kind of sad the 20, how old is he?
He's
29.
Yeah. The young person will die, and
it's his whole life that he had cracked.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he did kill, I mean, children.
And I understand the people's family, family's feeling, but...
Okay. Very good. Go ahead, Bruce.
One thing that has always fascinated me is how we've changed in this country over the last two centuries and how we deal with people, what capital crimes are. You know, if you go to Williamsburg, they had this territorial area, the territory of Virginia, they only had a prison with about six cells in it. Because, you know, if you stole something, they branded your hand to corporal, you know, punishment. If you stole a horse, they hanged you. I mean, there were a lot of people that were killed for things that were a lot less serious than what we would consider now. And justice was done quickly and firmly, and, you know, there's no reason to leave people in human, you know, garbage dumps that we, our correctional facilities we have now. You know, 100 years ago, you stole a horse, the hanging judge comes through town, they string you up. Or if somebody down the street did something you didn't like, you know, you send a mob out and then they take care of it. In Wisconsin, where I live, we have our Jeffrey Dahmer, this guy who, you know, shaking and all this terrible stuff he was doing, but he went to state prison for life, and a couple of other inmates beat him to death with a barbell. So we have our own...
He was what?
He was cleaning a toilet. Yeah. And he and another guy had killed his wife in the parking lot. So, and Jesse Tamendaquas, this guy with the Megan's Law, mm-hmm. who, if anybody probably in society who's deserved to be strung up, this guy probably does. But then you read this poor guy's story, the life he lived, the rapes that he endured as a child, the abuse of the families, there's absolutely no structure whatsoever. This guy had no chance whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It's odd how we've changed through life, through our history, but it just doesn't make sense to me that we would want to, you know, take that step and kill people unless we know we are doing the right thing, because we don't.
Okay. One more comment, and then we're going to reconvene, and I'll let you know what we're going to do tomorrow. Go ahead.
Real briefly, I met a man named Earl Charles in Atlanta about 8 or 9 years ago. He had been on death row for 7 years and was finally acquitted of his crime when somebody else confessed to it.
Right.
But he was sitting on death row, would have been executed under Bill Clinton because Clinton had signed laws to truncate all the appeals. He would be dead today under the present system, but he's innocent.
Thank you. Next, tomorrow we talk about adultery. And please come back and bring some kids along. I think that helps too. Please bring leave the copies there. Thank you so much.